Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM iSeries Nation Getting Started with WebSphere conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to your host, Mr. Kevin Larson. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you very much. Greetings, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome. This is the initial chat in the Getting Started with WebSphere series. My name is Kevin Larson. I'm the Worldwide WebSphere for iSeries Business Development Manager out of Rochester, Minnesota. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to attend today's chat, and hopefully we'll see you in the additional chats in this series. This is the first in a series of 8 chats designed to help you easily get started with the capabilities that the WebSphere products provide on the iSeries platform. We will hold these chats each week at this time on Tuesday, and on each chat, we will introduce a different topic and show you how to quickly and easily get started with the product or technology under that day's chat. Today's chat is called Getting Started with i5OS V5R3. The reason this is important is because with V5R3 of i5OS, we have included WebSphere capability at no additional charge. You'll learn about that in succeeding sessions. Now, today's speaker is Tracy Smith. He is a senior consultant with IBM and the technical pre-sales team leader in the Americas for our advanced technical support team. Tracy?
Thanks, Kevin, and welcome, everyone. Today what we hope to try and cover is a little bit of recap, perhaps, on some of the things that were software-wise announced from an operating system last year. Last year, as everybody probably saw, we had a lot of things coming our way in terms of hardware changes with the power technology. I've actually been working on the power technology in V5R3 for roughly 18 months, I think, now. And, in fact, I'm now working on the next release of OS that you guys will hear about next year, the 5.4 product, as it probably will be called. But just to kind of recap, what I want to do here is just kind of give you an overview of what did we put in i5OS, probably a little bit of a couple of items that you should know about, and more importantly, places that you can go and how do you plan for doing upgrades from various versions of the OS into the newer version of OS. You're going to hear us interchangeably talk about OS 400. We kind of have this challenge now where we change names and it kind of gets confusing. So you'll hear me talking about OS 400, and when I'm talking about i5OS, that is OS 400. It's just that we've renamed it to i5OS when we're referring to V5R3. So that's what we're talking about when we say that. So, again, we'll use those things interchangeably. It's just like we still use AS400 versus iSeries versus the i5 product. It really is just kind of trying to iterate where we've made significant changes in our hardware and software models. And we have had some significant changes as we'll talk about this. So at this point, I want to start on page 2. You should see a title labeled i5OS V5R3, the next generation of OS. Some things I want you to make sure that everybody's aware of. That i and iSeries and i5, it's so true to what we are all about in terms of this product line. The i being for integration. And it really is, how do we integrate our OS? How do we take advantage of the layers? Some people are a little bit confused with Power 5 when we talk about the operating system, especially when you start talking about other OSs running in your environment. And in this case, nothing's changed in terms of us having i5OS with TIMI, our technology independent interface, communicating to the lower level of license internal code. Sometimes you'll hear us call it SLIC, system license internal code. The big thing that's changed is if you're on a pre-Power 5, everything is the way you normally remember this system. Nothing has changed. So if I'm sitting on an 870, 890, 825, class machine, 810s, the 800s. If I went and upgraded to V5R3, it's just like everything I've been used to in the past. I go do my planning, and I'll talk about that later, and I'll show you some websites where you can look at this. I'll talk about a few things we've been adding to try and make life easier when we do upgrades from OS as well as hardware. What I do want to make you aware of, however, is that second bullet. For those of you that have these products, the 170, 250, or the 7XX models, take heed that V5R3 is the last release of OS to support those models. I'll show you a planning website later in this presentation where you can go look at a lot of very good information that talks from an OS, from a software layer, a hardware layer, as well as product previews so that you are prepared on things that are coming and changing as we move forward. The other thing here that I wanted to just kind of highlight, and these are the charts that I built for this slide deck last year when we were putting this together, just kind of what are some of the highlights of the things that we introduced in i5OS. So I'm just going to go right to the next slide to actually go through those bullets. In essence, I'm sitting on page number 3, the WAS server, the Web Application Server. You'll hear us call it WAS a lot, right? We kind of say the challenge we've got these days from Software Group is we call this the George Effect, the George Foreman, for those of you that know the boxer from the Americas. George Foreman over here in the States, George had boys, and every time he had a boy, for ease of use, he called them George. So everybody in his family that's male is named George. And we kind of followed that same philosophy here, I think, with WebSphere. Everything we do these days in Software Group is WebSphere this, WebSphere that. So it really is this WAS server, and WAS in this case really relates to this web application server. It is our application server, much like in the mainframe days when we talked about the CICS server and how it served up applications that were text-based, you know, 3270 based. Just like we had this workload management on the 5250, and we had an application layer server in the AS400. It was part of our workload management and our subsystems. So what we've done is, as we've moved into browser-based technology, and as we've moved through client-server days of the late 80s and 90s, and we move from client-server really to this web-based philosophy. And so what we really look at is, you know, best part about client-server computing was when we talked about converting our applications from being one monolithic piece of code stream to actually parsing it into different groups, a piece being the application code, a piece being data and data access, and the third part being the display interface. So in the days gone by where we exclusively used DDS to describe our 5250 screens, we've moved to a world where we're trying to change this, that potentially we can still have our 5250 RPG COBOL applications, but perhaps we've web-enabled them or web-faced them. And I know as you talk over the next few weeks of these conference calls, you'll be talking about some of the tools that you can use to actually enhance those environments. You know, part of what we've talked about in the days, myself and John Sears and a few of the rest of us here in the Rochester Lab, is really about this notion of not having to necessarily rewrite my applications, because I've got good RPG and COBOL code that's been running forever. It's a very tight, very non-compute-intensive kind of application programming environment. And so what we really talk about is how do I extend that business logic? And the way you do that is over this web environment, which in this case is something called the Web Application Server. The WAS server, as we'll see here, is something that the Express version of that is actually embedded in V5R3. So that's included. Something else that we included with it was this thing called the, you'll hear us talk about the IBM Blue Pages. We actually include an application that you can look at. You can look at the code around it. You can hack and modify it, your application folks. And what it is you'll hear IBMers, and we'll talk about all these IBMers being in Blue Pages. It's our IBM internal telephone directory. Well, what we've done is we've taken the underpinnings of that technology, and what we've done when we've web-enabled that technology here in IBM, we've actually taken that app and we've packaged it so that you can now also use that free of charge as well when you do 5.3 and start building an internal telephone directory. I'm sure over the next couple of weeks here they'll be talking about that and some of the things that are going on. Now, this next bullet, if you went out and looked, there's actually a page off of the IBM, www.iseries.ibm.com. If you went searching for V5R3 and ISVs, I was actually out, and I wish I could have gotten this URL in here, but it actually shows you all of the ISVs that are currently supporting their products on a 5-3 code stream. And there's quite a few of them. There's much more than 200 now. I think I looked just briefly, and I think there's probably between 300 and 400. The other thing that you see is a bullet here that says we have a plan for WAS version 6 in the second half of 2004. Well, one of the things that's happening today is actually just an announcement of some on the iSeries of several different bullets, and I'll try to review a few of those at the end of the call here. But today, what we're announcing is the we're announcing WAS version 6 today, and I'll give you the availability later here, and you'll, I'm sure, talk about that more in the upcoming calls. As I go to slide 4, this is this notion of another piece of code that sits on top of the WAS server, and it's actually the portal server. And these portals, as you can see the picture that we've included, it's a customized window into your back end of your system. And you can customize this based on users. So an example, some of the high-end bank customers that I've worked with in the past, they've had this desire so that their tellers could have a portal where they could have different pieces of the screen real estate pointing to different information. So as an example, if there's a hot bullet that I wanted my tellers perhaps to know, when they would sign on in the morning, they would actually see, here's the hot notes that I need everybody in all my teller community perhaps to know, or all of my loan officers, or my vice president. So you can set up these portals with different information in different locations, as well as even launching 5250-type applications through the, as we'll see, iSeries Access. So it's a new methodology for us to actually build an interface with a lot more than just a 5250 screen worth of content. It gives you lots of abilities into other connections of content into the organization. Now, these portals could also be extended to business partners and or customers. So it's not just an internal piece of application code that you would be using. And this has been something that a lot of our customer base has been very interested in, trying to move into these application spaces or this portal environment where again, I can build customized interfaces. So this content is what the ISVs are putting in their products. And you'll hear more about that again as you talk about more details of the WebSphere application server and the portal over the next several weeks of this community call. The other thing here is just a blurb on BRMS. This is our premier and backup recovery tool used on iSeries. Many customers use this. It's not to say that you still can't go to the go save command and do an option 21. You know, it's just this notion of if you do all of those backup plans and recoveries through menus, you can certainly do that. This is a mechanism for those of you that use BRMS to have enhancements into that backup recovery. You can build schedules around this. You can say, I have policies around here. You can set it up so if you're doing Domino, I can set up certain portions and manage and save certain portions of the OS and license program products, and then go out and do directory saves of other pieces of just the Domino server. So lots of flexibility. And what we've done with this product is, as we've integrated the ability to run Linux in an LPAR on an iSeries, we've included the ability to do some backup and recovery for Linux, and we've also now included backup recovery services for AIX 5L when you're running those kind of environments on an i5 system. And there's more details on the BRMS page, if you take the BRMS page off of the iSeries homepage. Lots of details in there about BRMS. This is just kind of introducing some of the areas of enhancement. Another thing that we've done is we've moved into the Power 5 technology is we've added the ability to hot add towers and IXAs. So this notion of, do I need to bring my system down to be able to do to add an integrated X-Series adapter, you know, one of these external 4 to 16-way kind of servers? So you could hot add one of these without having to bring your system down. Again, this is this notion of people wanting and customers needing the ability to keep their systems online without having to bring it down for planned maintenance. In this case, typically in days gone by, if you wanted to add PCI cards or towers, I used to have to bring my system down. Well, now the notion here is you want to be able to hot add these types of components on the fly without saying I need to bring my system down. So we've seen a lot of enhancements over the last couple of years for hot add of PCI cards, towers, and now the integrated X-Series adapters as well. And so that's in here. A huge item here as I look at page 7 that we introduced with 5.1, and it's still meeting a lot of confusion with people and trying to understand it, is this notion of something called cross-site mirroring. Some people believe because we've put this in the i5 OS that all of a sudden they no longer need an HA vendor, a high availability vendor or solution provider. And that, you know, in some cases might be true if you have an elaborate staff of IT people that are doing all the work to do an IP switchover or a role swap. When you talk about high availability and really what you're trying to do is, what I would tell you is we have added additional tooling, technology enablement tooling into the operating system so that we allow more tools that are native in the OS to be able to take content and move it to an off-site server for HA. So in this notion, what we're talking about is, and by the way, you see here, you must, if you're going to implement this, go into these things which are called independent ASPs, auxiliary storage pools. So an independent auxiliary storage pool, in days gone by, we had system pools and we had user pools. And this was an extension back in 5.2 where we added this ability to have additional system ASP and also the ability to have up to, I think the max number was 99 ASP defined on a system, I believe is what the number was. And so what this actually did was the first thing we introduced was switch to ASP. And this was a notion last in the 5.1, 5.2 time frame where I could have a gathering of disk drives, and I could have those drives with two systems sitting in the same data center, and I could hot switch the independent ASP from system 1 to system 2. And the scenario would be as if I was doing maintenance on system 1, perhaps I needed an application available, and I could switch that application to system 2 and serve through the whole notion of clustering and some of the things that we've done. The next notion where we started using independent ASP were with cross-site mirroring. What this notion is it's still using this underpinning of independent ASPs, but what we're doing now is at the ASP level, we have the systems communicating to one another, and so just like in mirroring, where I used to have mirroring in my system at the disk level, at the IOP, or perhaps at the bus level, or these days even looking at how I do it from a tower level in HSL loops, high-speed loops, this notion was extended beyond just the system image. And we extended the mirroring copy to say, wouldn't it be neat if I could have a target copy on another system that wasn't in the data center for disaster recovery? In essence, that's what we've done. So now there's lots of uses for cross-site mirroring. Again, it is doing it at the disk level, at the what's being written to one hard drive would be written across some perhaps link, you know, whatever you're using, satellite link or network that you've got between the two systems, and I'm making a write to a system that's remote somewhere potentially. Now, the notion here is with this kind of technology, it doesn't necessarily even have to be cross. The systems in its definition here would say the two systems are typically spread apart in two different data centers for disaster recovery. You still need high availability software to do things like IP takeover, role swapping, and or managing user profile updates and things like that. And that's why you'd still want an HA solution in this case. And we can't emphasize enough, especially when we're out doing consulting on high-end and customers that are trying to do HA, many people talk about backup and they talk about HA, but unless you physically test the plan, you could be in trouble. So we can't emphasize enough, the reason why we do backup is for recovery, and this is a place where people don't spend enough time, in our opinion. As I go to the next slide, there were enhancements in DB2 as well. In this case, page 8, where we're talking about DB2 and some of the updates we've done, we've enhanced the query engine, the optimizer in the system. We've increased table sizes. There's lots of content on DB2 as well with the way that we're doing database joins and some of the things in terms of query tables. So This, again, would be an area where I'm going to point to areas where you can go get additional information on some of these announcements. The next slide talks about some of the enhancements we've done, and I'm looking at business communications and printing. So there's been enhancements with PDF and some of the PDF function you can embed in the in your environment in terms of in your transactions and when you're printing. There's been some enhancements with the intelligent data stream, and this whole ability to serve up JPEGs out to the web, so that potentially, even if I'm printing, I don't necessarily have to print a hard copy. It can be a soft copy, and then I can distribute. This has been a thing where we've talked a lot of times. As I consult, I say a lot of people send out bills and things, and if you get customers to start doing, I want my bill electronically, you need to remember to send them the bill, but you also want to link them back to your website so you can perhaps do additional clothe it with additional opportunity for additional business from your company. The classic example I use is I actually use a phone company here in the States, and my bill, they give me a little bit better discount than some of the other phone opportunities I might select, but I get my bill electronically. They don't send me my bill and tell me, pay it, here's the amount. They send me a link saying, your bill is available, come to our site and see your information. This gives you an opportunity, and this is part of as you're doing billing and this kind of community capability, it gives you the ability to bring them back to your site, perhaps for additional business. Just some thoughts there. The next thing that we've done is the enhanced security with the integrated file system. One of the things that we've had in the system is this integrated file system, which is this culmination of different file systems under the covers of an i5 OS. And what this really is we ever had a virus attack OS 400? No. But what we have been able to do with the integrated file system is being a carrier of viruses. So as an example, if I'm serving PC-type files off of the IFS, which we're all familiar with, I could actually have a file sitting in my integrated file system that could contain a virus. And if I linked to that file system and downloaded it, I could contaminate my desktop with it. Now, in the past, the way that we would run virus scanning against the integrated file system is I may have a desktop, and I would hook that desktop with security rights to the IFS and just run either a Symantec or Norton virus application over top of it to make sure none of my files on the IFS had viruses. And obviously, I'd have write authority to, if I had viruses, to clean those up that were sitting on the IFS. Now, this was an example of a client-server solution, but again, all this was going over the network. Well, with 5.3, one of our ISVs, Byteware, actually built something where we now have a native application that you can run this Byteware app that will actually do real-time IFS virus protection and scanning for you. So anything you'd have on the integrated file system would be scanned at this point. Another thing, while I'm sitting here talking about the IFS, perhaps you've seen where we've come from type 1 file structures to type 2 file structures and some of the changes that we've done from 5.1 to 5.2. In 5.2, you could have both file type 1 and 2 type file structures. Once you get to 5.3, we will convert all of the file structures to type 2. In the memo to user that we'll point out later on, you'll do some reading, and what happens is there's a job in 5.3 that actually runs that will convert your IFS file system to type 2 in the background after you've upgraded to 5.3. It won't force you to do this all at once. It will do this with leftover cycles in the background. There's jobs in there that you can run that will tell you how far along you are on your IFS. So this is something that would happen, and typically for most customers, after you've put 5.3 on, it would probably get this update done on the first night you had it. But just some information on the IFS. So those are some of the, at a high level, enhancements we've done in V5R3. As I go now into additional enhancements here, there's page 12 where we talk about the iSeries access family. So now you can do web access through a browser interface via the WebSphere portal. We talked a little bit about that earlier. And some of the enhancements with Microsoft .NET data capabilities, and there's been some enhancements with ODBC and Linux to the UDB database server. The next page, we talk about browser-based iSeries Navigator tasks. So we are moving more and more of our interfaces into browser-based, and this is just taking the iSeries Navigator that was a PC application and moving that type of capability to browser-based screens or presentation layers for those customers that are trying to drive to a browser-based environment. The next screen, I just want to introduce this concept that in 5.3, we introduced this notion of having a Kerberos server. A Kerberos server is this private key distributor, so that if you're tired of having to sign on to everything every time you touch a website, it's this notion of we actually have this Kerberos server where we could do authentication. Now that we have a key, and the way I describe kind of the way this works in the key distribution center, I describe this instead of me having to have a keychain around and every time I go, I have to open a door and I have to find the key and open it. What this is I get a master key, and this master key knows me, and so the master key has my identity, and so I can use it on any item that's been added to my keychain or my lockbox. And so now you have this ability to run this Kerberos server. Today, unbeknownst to you, the Kerberos server in 5.3 runs on top of a PACE server. That's our portable application server environment, which is really this runtime environment for AIX-type applications, and that's exactly where what we're doing with the Kerberos server, and that's how it runs. It's underneath of there. So this is an extension of single sign-on and the ability not to have to every time I'm on a system or I'm dealing with a customer, I'm a customer of yours, and I'm trying to come onto the website, and everywhere I go, I keep getting challenged for user ID password. This is this notion where you have this ability to sign on once. An example that I kind of express daily is, you know, I sign on to my PC every morning. I'm being authenticated when I first sign on to Windows challenges me. Now, I could also have that challenge me every application that I touch. Like in my case, we use Lotus Notes. So when I hit Lotus Notes, it could ask me for a user ID and password. However, I can use function where in the Notes application, it is Kerberos knowledgeable, or you'll hear some people talk about the LDAP and some of the capabilities, how Lightweight Directory Application Protocol is used to manage things. But in this case, let me just back out here to say, I can now click on my environment for Notes, and it will automatically say, my user ID, have I been authenticated on this desktop? Yes. I am no longer challenged for a password. And the point here is flexibility. You can either challenge people every time, so don't think it's one or the other. It's whatever makes sense when you're building applications and whatever makes sense for how many authentications you need based on where someone is going. But again, it gives you the flexibility for certain environments where I don't have to be challenged every time I touch something. Some other environments are enhancements in 5.3 is the CL programming. We added structured type application programming type environments where now I have do loops and I have selects and iterates. So it really is a step towards, a lot of people said, will CL ever be enhanced? There was a major enhancement in 5.3 to add function to make it more like a structured application environment, much like what we did a few years ago with RPG. And this has been met with lots of kudos from the customers as they've started to adapt this. So for those people that don't think we added a lot of function in 5.3, this is just off the top, just some of the quick hitters that are in there. Now I'm actually going to go into the phase here where we're going to talk for the next 15 minutes or so on upgrading your operating system and just kind of a high level kind of what this is and how do you do this. I actually present this topic typically. I've done it at Common. I've done it here in the States twice a year at the technical conference for iSeries people. I do this at multiple events. I'll be doing it at another big user group meeting next month. And what this really is this is something where I work. I am part of a team here in Rochester, the product development team, where we look at upgrades from the hardware and the operating system. I actually, because I work with customers, I bring back a lot of things that I need to help me do this easier so that it's not so difficult for our customers. So over time, we have regular meetings here. In fact, I'm working on this meeting on a weekly basis where we bring back things and we talk about some of the enhancements that we've done. So I'm going to try and introduce a couple concepts and tell you about a couple of things that we've put out on the web to help you do this better. Because I've had a lot of questions from customers, and they've had the customers. I mean, you guys are the ones that make us do it right. You know, we can sit here and try and think what the right thing to do is all the time, but without hearing back from customers and, you know, here's what I'd really like to do. An example that I've told the PDT team, just to go on a war story before we get into the slides, is I said one of the most difficult things for a customer is when I go from V5 whatever to the next version of software, it's kind of always a leap of faith. You give me lots of websites to go do planning, but what I'd really like is what if I could run an application that I had a knowledge, say like in the days gone by where I used Best1 to do what-if analysis for performance. What I've kind of told them is what I really need is a what-if I'm going to go from V5R2 to V5R3. What I'd really like you, IBM, to tell me is if I could download a piece of code and you could say, let me capture some of the IBM tools that you're running here and know that you're running, like, as an example, this version of Lotus or that version of WAS or this ELP license program product, and I could tell you based on that if you're upgrading to 5.3, here's what you need to be worried about because you not only have to upgrade the operating system, you need to upgrade these LPPs, and you're also going to be upgrading these pieces of middleware that you're running on the system, because it's no longer supported or what have you. So in Lotus terms, that would be Domino, Same Time, Quick Place. We're talking about WebSphere. We're talking about perhaps some of the SQL engines that you've got running on this thing. So that's something we're working towards trying to do in the operating systems in the future. However, I want to let you know that one of the things we've done is we've actually built something called the Prereq tool, which is out off the upgrade sites. What the Prereq tool does, and I'll mention it as we start going through this when I get into planning, is it's the ability for a customer to actually go in and say, let me put in a feature code and see what this feature code is, whether it's a software or a hardware feature code. And let me go in there and tell you what it is and what versions of OS support it, and potentially what pieces of microcode you might need to have on your system. So this is in work that we're doing to try and build tools to make customers make it easier for customers to consume our products. Imagine that, huh? Anyway, as we go to the next slide, slide 17, what I'm doing here is just making sure that you're aware that we typically do N-2. So in this case, we have V5R3, so we support direct upgrade to 5.3 from V5R1 and V5R2. I put a couple bullets at the bottom of this slide just to make sure you know that all OS 400 partitions that run Power 5 server must be at 5.3. So if you were doing an MES upgrade from an 825 to a 550 as an example, if you did that, you'd want to make sure potentially, and I have the next couple of slides here, we'll talk about those steps, you would want to potentially upgrade your current system to the latest, all partitions to the latest version of i5 or V5R3 i5 OS before you brought them over to the new hardware. The Power 5 hardware today, the 5XX models, only support V5R3. The other point that I would tell you is if you're running Linux in a partition on a Power 5, on a system today, to get to Power 5, it must be upgraded to Power 5 versions of OS. So today, the Power 5 versions, and we've made the kernel between between P-Series and I-Series identical, the Power 5 kernel, so that if I wanted to run Linux on the systems today, we use a common code stream now, and if we were doing Red Hat, we'd be looking for version 3, update 3, because that supports micro-partitioning capability. Or if you were doing SUSE, you'd be looking for Celeste 9-type code, which is their Power 5 code stream, for those of you that are using Linux. One other thing that we've heard loud and clear from our customers, and typically there's this group that comes to Rochester. In fact, they'll be here in a couple of weeks, called the Large User Group, and they come from all over the world. One of the things that they've hammered upgrade team on is why do you guys force us to go to the latest version of operating system every time we want to get new hardware? We can't do it. It takes too much. Can't you do this better? So a statement of direction will be, in the future, when we come up with the next version of hardware, we will not force customers to go to the next version of OS. So our plan in the future, this isn't today, but in the future, and you'll hear more about this later in the year, we might announce new hardware, but we won't force you to upgrade your operating system to V5R4 as an example. So that means you'd be able to consume new hardware if we came out with whatever the next version of hardware is. Today we have Power 5. If it's Power 5 Plus and it's some new piece of technology down the road here, either late this year or next year, what we'd say is that hardware will run on 5.3 with the opportunity for you to upgrade it to 5.4 if you select it. So just in the future what we're doing. The next slide I have, slide 18, just says if you're in the situation where you're not currently on 5.1 or 5.2, you may want to upgrade and do a two-step upgrade on your production environment where you upgrade to 5.5, if you're on these older versions, V5R2 and above, you might upgrade to 5.1 and then upgrade from 5.1 to 5.3. Or you can see if you were at 4.5, 5.1, again, there's two release. These are methods of getting upgraded. So if you're doing an MES, you know, upgrading my hardware from an 8XX to a 5XX, We typically need your OS all updated. Sometimes, however, you may do some plans where you have side-by-sides where it's not necessarily that I'm bringing the entire system over. And those are things I'd encourage you to work with your business partners and the technical sales folks in the sales partners that you work with to really build a plan. Typically, what I talk about when I'm talking about upgrades is the 3P principle: plan, practice, and you won't perspire. All right. So it's really important to plan, and build a plan that works for you. You know, I have customers that say, well, I'm on a 7XX box or a 6XX box. Do I have to upgrade that production box to 5.3 before I go to my new hardware? And the answer is, it depends. If you want to test everything in production on that current machine, yeah, I do that. However, it's unrealistic because sometimes when you upgrade those systems to 5.3, some of the hardware that you have on those systems are no longer supported by 5.2 or 5.3. So it's kind of a catch-22, and that's why the planning required. A lot of customers that are on that old of hardware, they'll just bring in a new system and they'll continue running production, leave it the way it is. They'll use the save restore book, and they'll actually save off the different pieces of components like your security, like your object authority, and all your databases and libraries. And you would be recovering that on the 5.3 machine where it would be doing updates to those objects. And then you could be testing that production environment on the new system without affecting your real production environment until you cut over. So there's different ways to do this, and that's why I just encourage you to work with your technical teams to help you get through that as you do upgrades. From the Red Book perspective, there are LPAR planning and upgrade planning books that we do that Nick Harris and the ITSO publishes on a regular basis. So I'd encourage you, if you're doing that, go out there and look in the Red Books, www.redbooks.ibm.com, and search for V5R3 topics. I'm going to the next slide. The next slide here is just a typical upgrade. And this has been kind of the core upgrade that we've used forever, from the white box I-Series AS400s and the Bs and Cs, As and Ds, all the way up to when we were doing the SysToRISC, where we went from the 48-bit type to the 64-bit type. The notion here is I typically want you to upgrade your system to the latest version of code of OS, and then on the second weekend, update the hardware. This is, you know, it doesn't have to be the second weekend, but this is traditionally how we've done this, so that you're not trying to do it all at once. The big thing that I would tell you is when you do this type of upgrade, all your knowledge, all your this hardware description profiles move across when you're doing a true MES. If you were doing that side-by-side that I discussed, you need to do additional planning so that if you have applications that are looking for Display 01 or Tape 01 or whatever happens to be the device description, you would have new devices on that new piece of hardware with new device names, and you'd have to potentially change device names to match applications potentially that you run. So that's some of that underpinning that you look at when you're doing upgrade hardware or OS planning. The next chart, page 20, is just a bullet with a URL that I've included at the bottom. And if you've got this in the Adobe, you can go into Adobe and do a text select and cut and paste that URL that I included. And that's why I include those, so it's easy for customers to select that URL and bring it to your favorite browser and start building a list of browser pages that you might want to be able to go to when you're doing research on upgrading to 5.3. And this just more or less tells us that 5.4 has been withdrawn, 5.1 end of support is coming, and so it's just kind of the chart that shows you what's happening from an OS release structure. The next chart that I have, actually, this is page 21. Here's where I'm starting to give you URLs. And I'm going to show you the screens that actually in the next series of slides as reference points for you as you go through and start doing your planning. So as an example, the first bullet here is memo to the users. And that's actually located, as we'll see on the next page, in the V5R3 Info Center. The next one is software when you're doing planning to understand what software is supported. I've in a link here on Lotus products, as well as where you might go to see some of the announcement letters. So let's jump to page 22 where I've done a screen capture of the Info Center. I need to make you aware of two things. We used to have the iSeries, all the hardware and software in one Info Center. Well, with the Power 5 announcement and with the Power technology itself, we've created a new hardware Info Center. That hardware Info Center out there actually is where we include, that's the page where if you're doing some of the things that we've announced in terms of our Open Power server, our P-Series server products and our I-Series server products and our I.O. towers and drawer and the drawers that we have, that's part of the eServer Info Center. And you can get to that if you go here and you were in a topical area in the V5R3 Info Center that dealt with hardware, it will automatically redirect you to that Info Center. So that's in here. The page that I've included is the primary page when you get to the Info Center, and the first thing you see on there is the what's new and, in our case, memo to the user. I typically keep a soft copy of this thing. I have a hard copy laying on my desk over here, and it really is when I'm having questions that I point people to. In fact, my team actually builds the solution assurance checklist, and so this is one of the things when people are doing solution assurances that we point them to as an area to go do further research to make sure that you've got the knowledge you have. In this case, the next slide, 23, I'm showing you the front page of the memo to the user, and this has lots of content about what's changed in the operating system. It also would point you to the install guide for 5.3 as well. Just a point, when you're in the Info Center, there is an area where you can go look at all the documents. If you were looking at the Info Center and you were looking and you were saying, I'm on 5.3 and I actually want to look at additional documents, along the left side is the navigation bar. And while I'm talking on this, I'm going to give you a couple of tips. On the left side, you'll see all this navigation. One of the things customers typically say is, once I find it in the Info Center, how do I get back to that page that I found? A couple of tips for you. First off, if you're in a category area, if you right-click that area, you would see something that's called Make This a Favorite. Add to Favorites, it's called. So this would actually bring up the favorites so that whichever browser you're using, whether it's Firefox or the Explorer or Netscape, it would bring up the favorites dialog from that browser and allow you to add this link to your favorites. Another thing that typically happens, if you don't really want to add it to your favorites and what you're really trying to do is just find out what it is, at the bottom of that pop-up is properties. If you click on properties, you'd see it will give you the URL address of the page that you're on. So that's there as well. So there's lots of good information in here, and there's also this information where you start looking on printing and planning, and you could go look at all of the documentation that we've kind of been... This, the Info Center gets better all the time. I used to be a little bit hesitant on the Info Center, but the more I use it, the more I've learned and what's in there, and the more we're trying to get additional content in the Info Center. So I can't say enough that that is a very important place for you to be looking at when you're planning upgrades. The next page I'm giving you, page 24, is when you're planning your upgrade. This is a website that is awesome. It tells you this. If you were looking at whether it was planning to upgrade to 5.1 or 5.3 or 5.2, it tells you software. If you go into software, it would tell you any software that's no longer supported or licensed program products. It would tell you any hardware concerns that you might have. In fact, a couple years ago, I was presenting at tech conference, and someone asked me, I've got a 170, and my 170 has a tape drive in it that I was concerned of whether it was supported or not. So we went to this website and said, let's just see if it's in there. So I bounced around, I went there, and I went to hardware, and I looked, and lo and behold, somewhere in here, if I looked, it would have told me the tape drive that was no longer supported. And I'm actually clicking on that website while I'm talking to you, and down here it says, if I looked under hardware, it's telling me that the 13-inch, quarter-inch tape drive is no longer supported when I go from when I get to 5.2, and it's telling me the other feature codes that could be suggested replacements for that. So this is an awesome place as you're planning upgrades as well. The next page, I just took a quick link on that same website, and I'm showing you software components. The next page, 26, if you were Lotus and using Lotus products, it would show you the URL where you could do research on the Lotus Domino server and which versions are supported on which versions of Domino CodeStream are supported on which versions of our i5 OS. The next page would be the same kind of content, except for in this case, it would be Lotus Same Time, Quick Place, or the LEI products. As I kind of round this thing out, page 28, again, I just want to reemphasize and reiterate that 5.3 is the last release to support the models that we talked about in the beginning. Also, 5.3, if you went to that planning site that I was showing you, this is the last release to support System Product Division I/O processors, so the big book cards. We're moving towards, as we have with the 5074, 79 towers and the newer 5094s and 5294 towers, the big towers, or you look at like the 0595, the drawer type enclosure, or the 5095 freestanding tower, we're moving to PCI based on HSL connections. That is our fabric to connect remote I/O. And by the way, if you're trying to harness an environment where you're consolidating i5 OS on an iSeries with AIX, there's definitely a lot of work that we've done to help you in that environment as well. The other part of Bullet 2 says you have to look at, this impacts 820, 830, 840. You really want to look at the plan for these types of technologies and how do you take your towers, can you convert them, or do I need to replace towers, or what's going on? And that's part of this planning. And that website I gave you a couple of slides ahead where it said 5.3, 5.2 hardware, software, this is where you find that detail. Also, just a reminder that 5.1, end of programming support, is later this year. Again, with just a planning, the planning URL again that we talked about earlier. So with that in mind, I want to round out this thing, and we're at slide 29 where we'll now entertain Q&A. So I'm going to turn it back to Tracy with a couple of polling questions, and then we'll try and entertain a few questions and hopefully answers. So Tracy, back to you.
Thank you. To participate in our survey today, please press the star key followed by the number on your telephone that corresponds to your choice. For our first question, on a scale of 1 to 4, how valuable did you find today's presentation? For very valuable, press star 1. For valuable, press star 2. For somewhat valuable, press star 3. Or for no value, press star 4. And for our next question, would you like to be contacted by an IBM representative regarding today's topic? If you do, press star 1 for yes. Thank you. That does conclude today's survey. Thank you for your participation. We'll now move on to taking your questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Once again, just press star 1 if you do have any questions at this time. We do have a question from Richard Kirkler with Canada Dry.
We've got V53 already loaded, and I noticed on slide number 15 you talk about enhancements to the CL. Where can I find some documentation on the new enhancements?
Let me see if I can find you a URL here, Richard. I'm going to go try and go out. What I'm going to do is my first method, let me just see if I can do a Google and find that bugger quick.
Okay.
I know we actually have it somewhere. I just don't know that I have a URL to that particular topic. But let me just go out here and do V5R3 and CL enhancements and see if Google can get me there. Let's see. Okay, we get to, this probably isn't ours, but this is LISA.org. Okay, we know those, Long Island User Group. And by the way, I should point out, those CL changes are things that were enhanced. They were enhanced. You can also, you'll see PTFs to run those in 5.2 as well. Richard, what I'm doing is I'm out on Google, and what it's done, so I did in my search on Google, you know, google.com for everybody. Hopefully everybody uses that. I find that is a great tool to find stuff better than trying to search on our site sometimes. I did a search on V5R3 space CL space enhancements. In there, one of the things I've seen is Search 400. They have a tech talk on CL enhancements, part one, improvements to CL compiler. All right? And I know in their case, they do a lot of really good topical description on the enhancements. So I'm clicking on that URL. And in this case, they are giving me this website with content. Let's see. As I go down here, I know I must be having this on an IBM website. So I'm also going to, while we're talking, just go to the www.iseries.com. You know what? Let's do this. I know where those are at. One of the sites I told you to look for those would be in the Info Center, wasn't it? Remember I said good place to look was in the V5R3 Info Center? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to that website and you go under Programming and you go under CL, you will actually see what's new with 5.3.
Okay.
And it will actually have a reference on CL command description format changes, new and changed commands, and it really is the area that really would go, that's where you want to be.
Okay.
All right, that would be a good spot.
Great, thank you very much.
Well. Sorry for trying to drill around, but when I get these questions, you have to drill around on the Internet to find where it's hiding at, right? So thanks, Richard, for that question.
Sure, thank you.
Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 now.
While we're waiting to see if there's other questions, Tracy, just for those of you, you'll see today that we're actually making a couple of minor announcements on the iSeries. And just to give you an idea, I told you that we're a couple of just from a high level. We're actually, we've announced today WAS, the WAS server as an example. So the WAS server, let's see, WAS is announced, it's announced for general availability on 2.18 is what you'll see. So we're announcing at 2.15 with availability on 2.18. So if you were looking for that area, some of the things that we've done is you'll see on the 550 type iSeries, we've announced an SAP offering solution edition as well as a clear technology solution edition. We've made some minor announcements on 570 memory, a different new memory chip that's a little bit lower cost, 16 gigabyte memory feature. Some cabling enhancements to smaller cables for cabling IXAs. Some differences in the racks in terms of some acoustic doors and the ability to do 520 desk sides to rack mount type conversions. And we've also, just to round it out, done a 10 gigabyte Ethernet IOA that will be used to support AIX and Linux partitions. and a couple other odds and ends in terms of power cores and things like that, and also made some announcements on the 525, the 820, 830, 840 upgrades, and V5R3 going away here later this year. So that's in there as well. The other thing that I would mention, if you're doing hardware, you might see that we announced new HMC, hardware management consoles. We announced those January 25th, and I sent a flash out to the technical team. All we did was we ran out of the underpinning PCs that those are based on, so we actually just came out with newer the next version of desk side and rack mount. Functionally, they're identical. The OS that the HMC code that runs on them is identical. It's just that the PCs under the covers that we use for those, we needed to update because we were out of inventory on those. So if you see that and you're concerned that you didn't get the latest HMC, it's no big deal. It's just a different PC. So just rounding out just a little bit, so if you were wondering what we announced today or what was being announced today, nothing major, just a few house cleaning things as you heard me talk about. So, Tracy, I don't know if we got an additional call at this point.
And there are no further questions.
Okay. With that in mind, with no further questions, I'd like to thank you for the time that you've spent today. Hopefully you've gotten a couple of pointers here to help you do some research in different areas. And again, Kevin will be joining you on a weekly basis with different people here from the Rochester Lab discussing your travels through WebSphere and what you might want to understand is what the different components of WebSphere are to help you move your application development along perhaps the programming roadmap, if you will, and some of the WebSphere enhancements. So, again, thank you for your time today. Best of luck in the future, and thanks for working with us on this iSeries and OS400 environment. And have a great day. Bye now.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining.